You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
According to the City of Vancouver's 2005 survey of low-income housing in the downtown core, the total stock of low-income housing in Vancouver's downtown has been increasing in recent years. But Vancouver's Pivot Legal Society has been conducting its own research of the housing situation in the downtown east side and has come up with a very different picture. David Eby is a lawyer with Pivot, and he's joined me on the phone now. So good morning, David.
Morning, Peter.
Now, as I mentioned, the city report suggests that the stock of low-income housing in downtown Vancouver has been increasing. So what have you found?
Well, Peter, what's going on with that survey is the City of Vancouver asked landlords to self-report, to send in their information about how many rooms they have, what they rent for, that kind of thing. What we did was we looked at that data, and we looked at a couple of key factors that the city didn't look at. First, we looked at, is the housing actually available to people who are on social assistance? So housing, for example, that had been converted for student use, and no longer rents to people on welfare, but is intended exclusively for students, we counted that as housing that was lost to the low-income housing stock. The second thing we looked at was, is the housing affordable to someone who receives $325 a month as their shelter allowance on basic welfare? And we said, well, you can't just count it at $325 because a lot of people subsidize that with the $185 they're given to live on. So let's cut it off at $380 a month. And anything that rents for $380 a month or more is no longer affordable to people on welfare. And once we did that, we found that actually the housing stock for low-income singles was not increasing, but that there was an over 400-room deficit for the time period that the city was saying there was a 99-room gain. And that was much more consistent with what we were hearing from people on the streets who were consistently telling us, look, we're out, we're looking for housing, we can't find it, and the BC housing waiting list is 7 years long.
Now, the city's used the data from their survey to pass the Downtown Eastside Housing Plan. What's the purpose of that plan?
Well, the Downtown Eastside Housing Plan is based on the proposal that the city can do one-for-one replacement of lost housing, and that they have been doing that, and that they will continue to do that. Bringing market housing into the downtown east side based on this one-for-one replacement, as they have been doing in the past, is the path to the future. The issue is that they haven't been even close to doing one-for-one replacement. One-for-one replacement means that for every one unit of the old, broken-down residential hotels that is torn down, a new unit of social housing equivalent, housing the same population, is built. So that at least we have sort of a static stock of housing for low-income singles. And they haven't been even close to this one-for-one replacement, so the entire plan of aggressively encouraging condominium development in the downtown east side is not a great one.
So now what will be the consequences then of what problems will arise from that sort of overestimation of low-income housing?
Well, the consequences are many for Vancouver, and for the low-income population, what we see is building owners, for example, the Burns Block building, which is a building at the corner of Carroll Street and Hastings, the fire department came in and asked the owner to make some minor repairs, and the owner said, forget it, I'm not putting any more money into this building, you're worse. And they said, okay, fine, we'll close the building. So they closed the building and cleared it out of all the tenants, giving them 2 hours to get out. And the owner avoided all the provisions of the Residential Tenancy Act and all the provisions of other bylaws that help look after the people who live in the building when something like this happens. And but when the owner got vacant possession of the building, it was much easier to put it up for sale, and it's now for sale for five times what he paid for it just five years ago, for $2.5 million now. And so the consequence for people who live in the area is that this downtown east side housing plan is causing speculators and landlords to want to evict them from their buildings and convert them to some other use, like condominiums. And with the housing stock static and shrinking, there's nowhere else for them to live. So each time people hear about a building being closed, for example, the over 400 units net that we lost from 2003 to 2005, that's 400 people who are going to be on the street this winter because there just is no additional housing for them. It's just as easy as that. And so that's the consequence for the low-income population, but the population outside the downtown east side is starting to realize, hey, this is affecting us. So at Jericho Beach, they're seeing numbers of homeless they've never seen before. Wreck Beach has had an incredible issue with people camping out and sleeping on the beach. We've seen the city of Vancouver having to put additional security guards on in their parking garages because people are urinating and sleeping in the stairways. City of Vancouver is installing public toilets because so many people are defecating in the lanes. So increasingly, we're seeing a real effect outside of the downtown east side, and it's having a huge impact on Vancouver's international reputation. For example, there was an article in The Economist recently that that pointed out that there's very visible poverty in Vancouver, and things are getting out of hand here.
So now you were collecting, or the housing campaigns collected affidavits from residents in the downtown east side. Was what you were mentioning earlier about the building at Carolyn Hastings, is that indicative of what's happening, the housing situation for residents in this area?
One of the things that we were consistently told by residents of the area is that they can't find housing for $325 a month. That's something that we heard over and over. You know, our affidavit campaign has resulted in a report we'll be releasing next week. And in doing that work, I mean, there's something about sitting across the table from someone who tells you that they're living in their car. I sat across from this woman. She told me, I'm living in my car. My insurance is paid up till the end of the month. My car's worth about $500. I don't have any money to pay my insurance after the end of the month, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And there's something really overwhelming about sitting across from her and knowing that even if she went to apply for welfare that day, she'd have to wait 3 weeks before the first check would start, that she can't get housing for $325 a month, that she will end up having to subsidize it with $185 a month shelter allowance, and that she'll end up living on about $100 to $125 a month. And, you know, it's just when you meet people who are in these incredibly perilous situations and homeless and so close to homeless, it's awful for them, and it's pretty overwhelming.
So, yes, these seem to be, you know, the result of huge gaps in the social safety net. Do landlords in the downtown east side also contribute to this situation?
Yeah, the one of the things we've seen from the landlords is that they allow these buildings to get run down, and the city allows them to get run down. So the city of Vancouver has a power, technical name, the Standards of Maintenance Bylaw. But what this bylaw does is it allows the city to go into these buildings that are falling apart, make necessary repairs for health and safety, and then bill those repairs back to the owner so that it improves the quality of the low-income housing stock. They've only ever done this once in the history of the city. They've never done it since. The bylaw has been upheld by the BC Supreme Court. They're allowed to do this, but for some reason they don't do it. And so what happens is the landlords say, well, my building is worth about $500,000 as an active rooming house because no one wants to deal with the headaches of running a rooming house in the downtown east side. The lot that it sits on is worth about $3 million because a condominium developer would absolutely die to put a building up right in this place. And the American Hotel is an excellent example of that. So what they do is they don't put any money in the building, and they say, well, eventually the city's going to come and shut me down, and then I'm going to have an easier case to make for why I had to close it and why I don't have to pay the $5,000 a month, $5,000 a room to convert it to some other use. And so in the case of the American Hotel, they haven't put any money into that place for years. And now they're evicting all the tenants on September 30th. Every tenant in the building got an eviction notice. And the eviction notices said, we're evicting for renovations. But then the owner went on CBC and in the Globe and Mail and said, well, actually what we're doing is we're tearing down the building and we're building a condo. And so the landlords are contributing a great deal to this situation by letting the buildings become run down in the hopes that the city is going to save them from having to deal with their tenants in a legal manner.
So how can this sort of progression, you know, from affordable housing to condos, expensive condos, how can that be prevented?
Well, there's a couple tools the city already has. So they have this standards of maintenance bylaw that allows them to go in and make repairs in the buildings and keep them at a good standard. The second thing that needs to happen is the city of Vancouver's got this other bylaw that allows them to prevent conversions from happening from low-income housing to any other use like condominiums or tourist accommodation. That bylaw needs to be strengthened to include things like converting to student accommodation or when rent levels go beyond a certain amount. And the third thing that needs to happen is The third thing that needs to happen is the province of British Columbia needs to immediately raise welfare rates from $325 a month for shelter allowance to something where people can actually afford to rent a place in the city of Vancouver. And we don't have a city where people can't afford to live if they're poor.
I'm interested. I've only got a couple of minutes left, but I am interested in hearing your opinion on whether this is related to the upcoming Olympics. Are we seeing a repeat of the Expo 86 stuff?
It's looking more and more like a repeat of Expo 86, but it seems like for a couple different reasons maybe than that case. One of the challenges that the Olympics bring is driving up construction costs. So what we've seen are the cost of constructing new social housing projects has gone through the roof because construction is so hard, trades are so hard to get right now. But the main thing that the Olympics did was they made a promise, and it's called the Inner City Inclusivity Statement. And in that promise, they said that everybody in Vancouver is going to benefit from the game, from the very poorest to the very richest, obviously, will benefit from the games. And they have really been failing the very poorest. The Vancouver Agreement, which is three levels of government working together to make sure that all of the promises that they made actually get done, was supposed to be making a priority of housing in the downtown east side for the Olympics, ensuring that no one was displaced, that there were no negative effects on people who lived in the downtown east side. And they have been doing a pretty miserable job of that to date.
Well, thanks very much for talking with me this morning. I much appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for having me, Peter.
Thank you. I've been speaking with David Eby of Pivot Legal Society. This is, of course, Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM.